This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
It has come to my attention that last week's show was a little bit of a downer, leaving some listeners depressed. The management has asked me to read the following statement. Everything is fine. The future will be fine, too. The scientists you may have heard are just eggheads with a horrible agenda to enslave us all. There is plenty of oil for everyone. Plenty of cheap food. Eat your fill. Just relax and go to your job if you have a job, or stay home if you have a home. There is nothing to worry about. I am sorry if the future frightened or offended anyone. Alex Smith.
There's a great, big, beautiful tomorrow, shining at the end of every day. There's a great, big, beautiful tomorrow, and tomorrow's just a dream away.
According to a pseudo-scientific study, as reported by the Washington Post and the New York Times, alarmists,
like Alex Smith,
are causing more people to disbelieve in claims of global warming or peak oil. The Post's headline, "Gloom and Doom on Climate Can Backfire," new study says. Actually, as Joe Rome points out at climateprogress.org, the study doesn't say that, and the testing was just on a small sample of college students, but it fits what newspapers would like to say.
Greetings, my friend. We are all interested in the future, for that is where you and I are going to spend the rest of our lives. And remember, my friend, future events such as these will affect you in the future. We are giving you all the evidence, based only on the secret testimony of the miserable souls who survived this terrifying ordeal. Let us punish the guilty. Let us reward the innocent, my friend.
The study of UC Berkeley does show most people believe the underlying narrative of life on Earth is positive, essentially that God is just. We'll let the good Republican representative from Illinois, John Shimkus, explain this, as he did to an Energy Committee hearing last March in Washington, D.C.
So I want to start with Genesis 8, verse 21 and 22. Never again will I curse the ground because of man, even though every inclination of his heart is evil from childhood, and never again will I destroy all living creatures as I have done. As long as the earth endures, seed time and harvest, cold and heat, summer and winter, day and night will never cease. I believe that's the infallible word of God, and that's the way it's going to be for his creation. The second verse comes from Matthew 24, and he will send his angels with a loud trumpet call, and they will gather his elect from the four winds, from one end of the heavens to the other. The earth will end only when God declares it's time to be over. Man will not destroy this earth. This earth will not be destroyed by a flood. Two other issues, Mr. Chairman. Today we have about 388 parts per million in the atmosphere. I think in the age of the dinosaurs, where we had most flora and fauna, we were probably at 4,000 parts per million. There is a theological debate that this is a carbon-starved planet, not too much carbon.
And so you don't need to worry about all that carbon in the atmosphere, because God and the angels will save us from our sins. Science showing the contrary conflicts with and loses out to this deeply held belief. So the mainstream media and climate doubters tell us we should limit our talk here on Radio EcoShock to the positive side of the story. What a wonderful world it will be, lit up with LED lights. You will enjoy the ocean more now that it's closer. Most people will save on the clothing budget now that summer lasts most of the year. How am I doing?
They're only forestalling the inevitable end. Screw their tomorrow. I prefer to deal hands-on with the real future that awaits this stinking planet. The one of eating cancerous rats raw in the radioactive bilge-filled trenches of a shattered tomorrow, while the Krypton lasers slash the stinking skies overhead. Oh yeah, where are you gonna charge up your laptop, Ben? Huh?
That was just one of several clips I've pirated this week from Bob's Slacktime Funhouse. Show number 840 is called "The World of Tomorrow Will Suck." Find a link to that one-hour program as broadcast on WREK Atlanta in my show blog for this week of November 25th, 2010 at ecoshock.info. But let's just say, as an act of imagination here on radio, that fossil fuels do run out in a wildly heating world. James Howard Kunstler has brought that future into print with his latest book. You'll hear that interview next. And we have Tracy Mayer on the program, the self-styled Armageddon Mama, with the age-old problem, how do we talk to our friends and family about the coming apocalypse? Authors and artists often express the future years too soon for our own comfort. James Howard Kunstler is like that, and worse, he's one of the best American writers of the day. Some people love to read his articles while hoping he's wrong as hell. I'm Alex Smith. I'm honored to have James Howard Kunstler join us to discuss his new novel, The Witch of Hebron, and what it means for our future. Mr. Kunstler, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
It's great to be here.
In your 1994 book, The Geography of Nowhere, you describe the modern landscape of strip malls, antisocial architecture, badly functioning suburbs. Are we more ready to dream along with you into a simpler world precisely because we feel so little love for our present surroundings?
Well, that's a very good point. And I think it's true that these things that we've built, these environments that we spend our daily lives in, tend to be places that are not worthy of our affection. And, you know, that has a big effect on how we think about the world and our life in it, our place in it, literally our place in it, because, you know, we don't really like the place that we find ourselves in.
No, I was just standing on the corner of a six-lane road ready to be run down by anybody, and I'm thinking, what am I doing here?
Well, you know, a lot of people have that experience of, you know, every day. And you know, I go all over all over North America, and I go to places like, you know, suburban Texas. I just don't know how people can manage it.
In 2005, you made a new mark in the peak oil prediction with your book, The Long Emergency, and that almost began a movement. Are you gratified the International Energy Agency finally just admitted peak oil may have occurred in 2006? And will that push more people into taking your novel seriously?
The IEA was extremely coy about it. And the only thing they really did was publish a chart in which they indicated that there would be massive amounts of new oil found and developed for which there's no evidence. So they backed into something that just about every other authority in the world has already admitted.
And the first book in this series we're going to be talking about is World Made by Hand. What should we take from your second title, The Witch of Hebron? Why did you choose that?
Well, you know, I'm trying to get people into this world that I've created of the post-oil North America. And I'm trying to get them to sort of feel the textures of and sensations of what it's really like to inhabit a post-petroleum and, to some extent, post-economic collapse world. You know, a world in which the electricity is not on anymore and you cannot run to the internet for everything and you barely know what's going on outside your county. And most of the work that is occurring is, you know, happens in and around agriculture. And you have to work shoulder to shoulder with your neighbors, and you're eating food that's grown locally that, you know, is, you're not getting mangoes from the Caribbean anymore. And it's a whole different way of life. And, you know, the thing that I find most amazing, perhaps, is the public's inability to imagine living under different circumstances. It's really very striking.
It sounds a little bit like 18th century America or even the Middle Ages. Do you think that the future will contain some resurgence of the past?
I do happen to believe that, although I hasten to point out that composing a novel is a kind of emergent, organic experience. It tends to tell you where it's going on its own. And, you know, there are things I learned about this world that I was creating in World Made by Hand and The Witch of Hebron that surprised me. For example, within the first 10 pages, I realized these people aren't riding bicycles. They can't get the, you know, the special alloy metals necessary for the replacement parts, and they can't get rubber, and the pavements are all broken up because they, you know, they're living in a much more austere, much less affluent society, and you know, we have no idea how much money it takes to just keep the roads in passable condition in our continent. So, yeah, I think that things are going to be, I think that we will be discovering and rediscovering a lot of practices that we haven't done in a long time. And, you know, everything from having larger households with more people in them to working in some other way than sitting in a cubicle in front of a screen.
I was trying to picture your writing process. You seem like a person very plugged in. You must be buffeted by a stream of discomforting news, as we all are. And yet you are doing creative writing. How much is calculation and how much inspiration? Is that possible to say?
Well, I'm basically not a very neurotic writer. I may be a neurotic person, but I'm not neurotic about writing. I don't get blocked. You know, I'm not an alcoholic. I don't distract myself with all kinds of avoidance behavior. What I've discovered over a career of writing books of various kinds is that, you know, you just sit down and you engage in the task, and then it tells you what to do. And the most important thing is engagement. You know, it kind of gets to what one of the great social psychologists of the age said. He's got a very complex name. He's an Eastern European named Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi. And he wrote a very important book called Flow about 10 or 15 years ago, and it's all about the process of mental engagement and creativity, really. And, you know, it's a process that you have to have respect for. And the first thing you have to do in respecting it is show up.
Would you recommend people read The Witch of Hebron to prepare themselves for a crash?
Well, both of these novels I've written, World Made by Hand and The Witch of Hebron, will eventually comprise a series of four books, which I'm planning to write, you know, one for every season, sort of like Vivaldi's concertos. They stand alone, you know, you don't have to read them in sequence, but, you know, I think that they might help people mentally prepare themselves for a different world. You know, the catch is that unlike Cormac McCarthy's The Road or other visions of the future, this one is not wholly bleak and negative. It, you know, it's not an ecotopia by any stretch. But, you know, what I have tried to do is picture a world in which there are actually quite a few positive developments. They may be things that people have walked into kind of backwards or inadvertently, like the fact that they have to make their own music with their neighbors because you can't get canned entertainment anymore in a world made by hand. You know, they're working with people they know at things that matter to them, and that's just sort of a consequence of what has happened to them. You know, they still find joy in life. They still find love. They live in an ecology which is, to some extent, recovering. Cars are not running anymore in this world I've created, and, you know, nature is coming back rather robustly from the indignities of our time. And, you know, they're hearing the birds sing, and they're breathing clean air, and, you know, they're feeling the full sensory experience of being connected with the planet again instead of leading a mediated existence.
I have lived that life for 10 years without electricity, and I still miss it. Getting back to the book, many expect the court system and the rule of law to break down in a dystopic future. Perhaps it's already broken down, and yet your characters still search for justice. Can they find it?
Well, a big theme in these books, in these novels I've written, is the search for the rule of law and justice. These people are keenly aware that the rule of law has more or less abandoned them, and they're suffering, and they spend an awful lot of their energy in the book trying to reestablish it. So a lot of the plot of both of these books is attempts to get people to pay for the consequences of their action in the absence of any legal apparatus. I do have to say, I think the rule of law even now is fading away, but oddly enough, at the highest levels first, you know. It has fled from the financial scene, where regulation is no longer taking place and where enforcement is no longer taking place. And that's partly responsible for the banking fiasco that is now underway. And Mr. Obama in the USA has not been able to reestablish it. Nobody has been prosecuted for the frauds and swindles of the last several years. And there's not even any sign that there's any federal investigation of it going on. None whatsoever. We're now in the middle of an enormous mortgage document scandal that may fatally injure the real estate business because no one can establish real title to property. And so the rule of law is very much at stake even today before things seem to have broken down.
Not to mention the possibility of a war criminal publishing his own book and going out on a book tour. This is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith. We're talking with James Howard Kunstler about his new post-carbon novels, World Made by Hand and The Witch of Hebron. I found most of the central characters, Jim, were men, wandering vagabonds like Billy Bones, the boss man organizers like Mr. Bullock or Brother Job.
Well, they're not wandering. Brother Job is hardly a wandering vagabond.
But they were the boss men, we would say.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Well, this is a world in which hierarchy has been reestablished, you know. I personally believe it's been one of the luxuries of our time that we've been able to pretend that human society is not hierarchical, when in fact it is, and mostly has been through human history. I actually got a lot of complaints from female readers that my female characters were not sufficiently heroic or valorized. Well, you know, I replied to them, frankly, that I found it odd that they were unable to imagine a very different economic and social future in which social relations might change between the sexes. You know, everybody seems to be expecting that it's going to, you know, that our social relations will continue a la 1998 forever. And we don't seem to have any imaginative capacity to think otherwise. So it's a strange thing, but, you know, it just sort of represents a sort of cultural programming that's gone on.
Another question I might raise is not really about your vision, which I have to agree with, but perhaps your timing. The stock market lasted years longer than any of us thought. And
yeah, including me.
Oh, I know. And we still haven't seen a period of military rule. Our time of the Caesars hasn't happened, and maybe city-states. So where I see waves of trouble and regrouping, you're predicting a fundamental breakdown possibly within the next 10 years. Why do you say that?
Because I think that what we're seeing, self-reinforcing feedback loops of broken and impaired and wounded systems that are going to amplify and ramify each other. For example, the banking system is one of the complex systems we depend on. It's now deeply injured. It can barely function. And most of the major activities of commerce and international trade and even local trade don't function well without banking. And, you know, we're discovering that to our dismay right now. When we get into trouble with oil, and, you know, we're about there, especially at over $80 a barrel, that's really when it starts injuring North American economies. You know, that's going to affect the trucking system. It's going to affect the price of things in retail. It's going to affect Joe Sixpack and everybody else who has to go out and pay for gasoline. And, you know, we're going to start seeing that affect the agriculture sector. The banking failure will affect the agriculture sector. Many people don't realize this, but one of the biggest, quote, inputs for industrial agriculture after the oil and gas-based herbicides and fertilizers is capital. They need to borrow a lot of money every year to keep their stuff going. And capital is going to get scarcer and scarcer. So we're seeing these systems that are affecting each other, and I think that they're going to get into trouble much sooner than a lot of other observers. For example, you know, the airline system has been on its knees for the last 5 or 10 years, and especially the last 5 years with the price of oil going up and down and not just not being reliable. I mean, it's very hard to conduct business when you don't have a reliable business model with prices that are predictable. And, you know, the next time we have a major price hike in a barrel of oil, I think you're going to see the airlines stagger.
Do you think this banking collapse and the finance problems will have an impact on the fossil fuel situation as well?
Absolutely. And actually, a Canadian gal named Nicole Foss has been one of the most astute commentators on it. And, you know, the point that she's made is that what we refer to as demand destruction, you know, when ordinary so-called consumers cannot buy as much stuff as they used to, that demand destruction eventually leads to supply destruction. Because what happens is less and less capital is available to the oil industry, and they simply aren't able to develop the whatever few discoveries they've made and get them into production to offset the ongoing depletions that, you know, are going on every day. What's more, we're faced with this additional problem that has been referred to as the oil export problem. And by that we mean that the nations that send oil to us are increasingly using more and more of their own oil and unable to export as much as they had previously. So the export rates are going down a lot from places like Saudi Arabia and Mexico. And you know, these are like our number two and three sources of imported oil in the USA after Canada. Mexico was our number three source of imports. They've gone to number six in just 18 months because they're in such steep depletion. So all of these things are really going to end up expressing themselves very vividly for us.
I've heard you have a new nonfiction book in the works. What could you tell us about that?
Well, it's sort of about how we're messing ourselves up with our technological grandiosity, the techno-rapture, as some people have called it. You know, we have this idea, we're programmed to think that technology will furnish us with some silver bullet to get through this bottleneck that we face. And I think we're going to be very disappointed to discover that you can't run suburbia and Walt Disney World and Walmart on any combination of alternative fuels or systems. And it doesn't mean that we shouldn't try to use them. I think we'll try every kind of alternative energy there is. It's just important to realize we're going to be disappointed by what they can do for us. We're going to have to run a lot less stuff, a lot more modestly, and we're not at all prepared for this.
I was speaking to a San Francisco city planner last week, and I said, well, I'm going to be talking with James Howard Kunstler. And he said, well, would you ask him if he will be bringing forth suggestions about ways we could transition our existing institutions for a softer landing?
Well, you know, there's a great wish that we could just, that there's some kind of program to follow. You know, there's really a few things that we need to pay attention to very generally, and one of them is that this is going to be all about downscaling and relocalizing. You know, and if you can adjust your thinking around that idea, then, you know, you can come to some better outcomes. For example, people are knocking themselves out trying to think of new ways to run all the cars. Can we run them all on electricity? Can we run them on biodiesel or natural gas or some other thing? But the same people will put absolutely no effort into talking about walkable communities or public transit. This year in the USA, you know, in association with the banking failure and the economic disaster, we spent all this money on stimulus for highway projects. Well, you know, I don't think we're going to be running the car system in 5 or 10 years the way we've been used to it. We need to make investments in the North American railroad system because this is a big continent, and I don't think people are going to get around in 10 years if we don't have a railroad system in place that's any good. And we don't right now. You know, both Canada and the USA have allowed their railroads to deteriorate horribly. I'm talking about passenger, not freight. We've allowed all these lines to be torn up, and double tracks especially, which allow passenger trains and freight trains to run separately. We have a railroad system that the Bulgarians would be ashamed of now. And that's just not going to cut it. You know, we got to put more investment in that. So, you know, walkable communities, public transit, things like this, this is where the benefit's going to lie for us, not in techno-raptures about buying more electric cars, because that's not going to work. That's going to disappoint us.
Getting back to your latest book, The Witch of Hebron, I went over to your website for the book, thewitchofhebron.com, and I listened to that excellent interview, I thought, with Peter Golden. And you questioned there the viability of the publishing industry as well, and I've noticed a huge decline in author book tours here. Do you think this World Made by Hand series will find a new home in a movie, perhaps, for the screen generation?
Well, you know, it's funny. My agent and I were talking to a major, shall we say, venue for television a year ago, and we went up against another dystopian story. They were shopping for a dystopian story, and they picked the one with zombies in it. So you can see where their heads are at, you know. A lot of industries now are in disarray, and publishing is one of them. You know, they're not selling as many books as they used to. They've been firing people left and right. They don't have much money. It was never a really big money industry. I mean, it was always pretty much a kind of gentleman's small change boutique industry. And it kind of blew up into an overblown thing with conglomerates in the last 20 years. But now it's in a period of contraction like other things in the economy. And we don't know if the old publishing model of the mid-20th century is going to persist, you know. You know, a lot of people are doing different things. A lot of people are publishing themselves. They're you know, using independent booksellers to publish. There are new networks being established. A lot of people think that the actual hard copy book will not be with us that long. I don't know about that, because I have even more doubts about the internet staying with us forever. You know, I think that eventually we're going to have problems with the electric system, with the supply of electricity, you know, in various regions of North America, not all at the same time in the same way, but, you know, the places, for example, that don't have a lot of hydro, the places that are burning just natural gas or coal, they may get into trouble sooner rather than later. So I'm not convinced that electronic books are going to be with us forever. But there's no question that the writing industry is in disarray. And another layer of it, of course, is that at the article level, at the magazine level, with all of the hard copy magazines going out of business, it's almost impossible for young writers to find a way to make a buck or even get into the game. The way, you know, when I started out in the 1970s, you could at least pay the light bill by writing stuff for glossy magazines, you know, even if it was only recipes. Now, you know, you can't even make a buck doing that anymore. So it's a pretty gnarly situation out there.
Well, as we wrap up, James Howard Kunstler, here in the fall of 2010, I feel like we're floating in the eye of a storm. It seems like big things are happening behind the scenes.
Me too.
But the mass media is boring and filled with trivia.
It's incredible.
Isn't it amazing?
Yeah, I mean, you know, right now, I mean, just as we're talking today, you know, there's some question about whether the European currency system is going to blow up. And this has been going on in the background now for about 8 months, really, but especially hard in the last 2 weeks. And yet you wouldn't know that, you know, anything really momentous is going on out there. You know, all kinds of weird things are going on in the background of the USA, and we've got this new mortgage gate scandal that's all about inability to document whether or not people actually own the property they say they own or are trying to foreclose on. We're hardly talking about that, and it's a huge problem. So, yes, you're quite right. It's a stupendous thing that, you know, that we're the only thing we seem to pay attention to is Bristol Palin on Dancing with the Stars.
Well, that's why I depend on your Monday morning blog at Kunstler.com. I do read it every week, and one of the phrases you used in it was being stumped out loud, and that's how I feel. I just don't understand what's going on, and I think I'm a well-informed person.
By the way, that's a line from The Witch of Hebron. I've got a character named Brother Job who runs a Christian cult, and he's a Southerner, and he's discovered that his horse is poisoned, and he doesn't know what happened to it. And he tells this lady that's in the cult with him that he's stumped out loud. And she says back to him, "Everything you are is out loud."
Is there anything you'd like to add, a parting message?
Well, you know, I wish the best for people. You know, I certainly am. I'm not a doomer and a gloomer. I like to characterize myself as an actualist because I'm interested in what's actually going on out there. And, you know, I think people will enjoy my World Made by Hand novels and the new one, The Witch of Hebron. They're designed to be at least very interesting and funny and dramatic. And I'm going to go on, write some more books, and keep on keeping on.
Our guest has been author and urban critic James Howard Kunstler. Find out more about the book at thewitchofhebron.com, at your booksellers, or just go to Kunstler.com. James, thank you so much for your time and for your insight.
Well, you're very welcome. Thank you, Alex.
I'm Alex Smith for Radio Eco Shock.